What's up, everybody? This is Healing Intentions, and I'm your host, Dr. Adrian Mimetti. This podcast is about natural health and wellness, mental health, cannabis, psychedelics, philosophy, and spirituality. Today, my guest is Jonathan DePotter. Jonathan is the founder of Behold Retreats and advocates for elevating consciousness and working on ourselves as the most meaningful way to improve the world. As a thought leader in plant medicine, his priority is to guide others to maximize the benefits and to raise education and awareness on the subject. He enjoys complex problems, meditation, surfing, and is energized by big, bold ideas. Prior to founding Behold Retreats, Jonathan worked as a strategy consultant at Accenture and country manager for Capco Thailand, supporting Fortune 500 companies with their digital strategy and technology transformations. Let's get started. All right. Today on the podcast, we have Jonathan DePotter with Behold Retreats. Welcome, Jonathan.
Thanks for having me, Adrian. I'm super excited to speak with you.
Yeah, this is really great. I'm so glad that you actually reached out to me and got to learn a little bit more about yourself and your retreats that you're holding, and really excited to have you on the podcast and talk about one of our mutual favorite topics, which is psychedelics and, the beautiful effects that they can have on humans and consciousness in general. So I would love to just kind of start with telling me a little bit about yourself and your story and kind of how you got to starting Behold Retreats.
Yeah, sure thing. So I grew up in Hawaii. Hawaii is a beautiful place, but it's also a very substance-rich environment. And actually, growing up there, I really wasn't attracted to any of the substances. You know, a lot of my friends, unfortunately, found drugs, as it were, relatively early in life, 11, 12 years old, even. I just saw around me a lot of negative energy from substances in general. And so I always, and from a very early stage, thought, nothing of this sort is ever going to be right for me. You know, what I saw was actually an alignment between what we're taught in school, the drug abuse resistance education, just say no narrative, totally resonated with me because it aligned to what I saw around me in my community. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I think, so I grew up there. I moved to New Zealand. I lived in New Zealand 10 years for university, early stage of my career. And I've now been in Asia for the past 8 years, first 5 years in Hong Kong, where I was working with Accenture. I was a director in strategy consulting. And then subsequently, I moved to Thailand to establish a boutique consulting firm and scaling that for the past couple of years. But, about the last 5 years, I've really begun to dedicate a lot of my time and energy towards plant medicine. I had my own first experience in Peru about 5 years ago, and that really opened a lot of doors for me. I went into that experience a little bit of an egocentric person, if I may admit. I went into that experience a pretty impatient person, a person that wasn't as conscious as we might like to be in terms of the impact that we can have upon other people. And I went into that experience as an atheist, not believing anything of the spiritual realm. I came from really spiritual, quite hippie parents myself, and I just rejected all of that from a very early stage, as we so commonly do. And so for me, plant medicine has really represented an incredible blessing, a real humbling return to recognize the wisdom that, one, that my parents had, but also, two, that these ancient plant medicine traditions represent. And it's just been such a healing and such a learning journey that I just feel throughout that 5 year period, it's been such a blessing for my own journey, and also to begin to be able to support friends, and then ultimately leading me to launch Behold Retreats, which has also been great. And the customer success stories that have come out of that have just redoubled the motivation to bring more people on their healing journeys.
That's wonderful. Yeah. And I actually got a chance to listen to you on another podcast, and you were talking on there about how, it's not about the number of people that you have come through your retreats. It's really about you're looking for those outstanding, just phenomenal success stories. And I really love that because it's, you know, it's a quality over quantity game here. We really help to impact, you know, a few key people like your mission is, and that kind of really will trickle down from there. And I really love what you're doing with that. And I think that you're on the right track. Absolutely. You know, with going after the business leaders, because they have a lot of influence and, you know, they're managing and under control of a lot of assets and people and human potential. So with that, there's a lot of potential, you know, like the article you put on your website today, your potential is exponential. And I think that's just beautiful, beautifully said. So yeah, wonderful.
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks, man. And it's, you know, the potential of this work for the business world is just incredible. And, you know, I can admit myself that, you know, I was stuck in that quote unquote system, right, where I was pursuing the promotions and pursuing, you know, all of those normal egocentric pursuits of life. And, you know, as more people make the shift away from self-service into how can I be of broader service, you know, it's a, I think we're right in the middle of that shift at the moment, you know, that a change in the conversation from, you know, all of the byproducts of egocentricity, which is that we are compulsively thinking, we are comparative in nature, looking at what other people around us have. Mm-hmm. We are trying to accumulate, right, power and money and influence. And we're doing so at the expense of ourselves. We're doing so at the expense of others. And we're doing so certainly at the expense of our planet. And so all of these externalities are being, you know, kind of treated as secondary to our fundamental selves. And we're being separated from our true nature by virtue of that separation, and come to believe and identify ourselves as all of these things that we are not. And so, yeah, it's a very exciting time to be alive and to kind of bear witness to this paradigm shift towards holism, towards heart-centered leadership, towards, you know, guidance not just coming from the egoic mind, but also from our spiritual connection and from our hearts, and to begin to, yeah, to live more in a joy, in a state of joy and love and peace and abundance, as opposed to fear and pride and envy and scarcity. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, this work has shifted me along that path tremendously. And so, yeah, we're very excited to help others in the same regard.
Yeah. Just beautifully said, just, you know, sharing the love that you are able to feel and experience yourself. Right. And just kind of bringing that out to as many people as possible. So what is it that really makes Behold different than the other kind of retreats that are out there? I know that's kind of a really fast growing market. You know, people may start looking into it and it's just like, wow, there's this many retreats out there, you know? So what kind of stands out with Behold?
Yeah. I guess the motivation for me grew as I came to recognize that so many people had stories similar to my own with plant medicine. So my first experience, I certainly wasn't well prepared. I now recognize that I wasn't well spiritually cared for through the experience. I was well physically cared for. They were very loving people. They were doing their absolute best. Don't get me wrong. But I wasn't well spiritually cared for. And equally, I didn't integrate the experience. So if I'm speaking honestly, after my first retreat experience, probably a month later, I was back to the same asshole that I was before. Right. So I missed out on this tremendous transformational opportunity. And I think, yeah, having spoken with so many other friends and having spoken with so many others about their own experiences with plant medicine, we can really see that actually the overwhelming majority of potential benefits that might emerge from this work are being missed. And they're being missed for a number of reasons. There's a long laundry list, so we don't need to go into it too much. But in essence, I think that one, people are skipping a lot of the preparation work that is required for getting the most out of one of these experiences. Mm-hmm. People are skipping the mental and emotional work, self-inquiry and self-discovery in order to come into these experiences with a really deep sense of intention. Not just at a surface level, like, oh, I'd like to know myself better. Or, you know, I went into my first experiences with these kind of a bit broad, vague intentions and kind of got the whack as a result of not having, you know, that intention and being carried away by the experience itself without necessarily using the plants as the mechanism to fulfill my potential, fulfill my goals and fulfill something which is a little bit more purposeful, to mm-hmm. be honest. Mm-hmm. The third dynamic here is that, you know, the reality is that there's a gap between science and policy, and that gap is going to persist for quite some time. The ayahuasca, for example, has 463 compounds, so it doesn't fit our Western medical model for research. Because we like to control for compound isolation and dosage control, which just fundamentally isn't possible when you've got this, you know, indigenous brew that is the combination of specific plants in different amounts and even mixtures in different amounts and sometimes third and fourth plants being mixed in, and there's different varietals of the ayahuasca vine, and so there's so many moving parts that it just really fundamentally doesn't fit our Western medical model. Right. The other dynamic is that as a result between this gap between science and policy, this work is unregulated today. So that just means that, you know, there are a lot of individual operators that are trying to do the best that they can, but there is no overarching guidelines for exactly how it is that one should be doing this work. And so, again, the overwhelming majority of people are doing this work with the very most heartfelt intentions, but they might not be taking things like safety and contraindications and keeping up with the latest medications that are contraindicated and all of those sorts of things, because they're just small businesses that are operating, you know, variously in, around the globe in locations where this work is being permitted. So there's, you know, that kind of dynamic that comes into it. And then finally, I would also emphasize the point around working with really expert practitioners. You know, the reality is that there's not that many expert practitioners. You know, I spent my first three and a half years on my own journeys going to really high quality retreat centers, but I now recognize that there are a lot of things that they were missing. They were doing the best that they can, but there was a lot of pieces missing, in particular in relation to the energetic work. So, you know, the retreat centers are often doing a great job with the medicine. They're doing a great job with the, you know, providing people medicine. They're doing a great work job, you know, holding space and kind of facilitating people through the physical and the emotional aspects. But the spiritual and the energetic work is a whole nother realm that is often not very well understood by the practitioners themselves or even you know, the people that are facilitating the ceremony. So that's an area that, you know, I think we'll see in the period ahead the capability really lift, which is very exciting, because that's important. And then finally, integration work. You know, like I shared with you, Adrian, mm-hmm. when I came out of my first experience, I had all these big breakthroughs. I was motivated to be this great new person. And then a month later, I was back to whom I was before. So it's really important that we have the right guidance to interpret the experience, and that we actually have the guidance to also integrate that back into our daily lives. You know, so it's very common, say, for example, some people relive traumatic experiences from their childhood. Mm-hmm. Often people feel very inclined to go ahead and confront other people, say family members, in relation to that experience before they fully integrated that into their own being. And so just having, you know, the right guidance, and that's just one of, you know, a thousand different experiences that can take place in these retreat centers. Yeah. So what's very important is to have the guidance through that, so you can make sure that experience is fully integrated, or any other experience is fully integrated into your own being before you kind of begin to take the next steps, whether that's telling your boss that, you know, exactly what you think of him, or, you know, whatever it is that might be, making drastic changes to your personal life, you know, right. any sorts of experiences or you know, experiences may come. And so it's important to have some expert guidance of people who've seen hundreds, if not thousands of cases, so that they can reflect other people's experiences and bring that knowledge to bear for your benefit.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's definitely something that is so, so important. And you hit a lot of important points there, but just the integration piece. I mean, I've heard in many, you know, psychedelic circles, people talk about, like, that is the most important part, is the integration. You could have an awesome experience and a great preparation and all of that, and if you don't integrate that into the real world, it's like, you know, you see God and you talk with God and you embrace God fully on Saturday, and then on Monday you have to go back to work. It's like, well, how does that work, you know?
absolutely. It's a process, you know, and there's many layers to that process, and it's great to see the narrative shift in regard to plant medicine to focus on that integration.
Absolutely. Yeah. So I'm curious, kind of your history. How did you first hear about psychedelics? What was it that eventually got you to say, hey, you know what, I'm going out to Peru and I'm going to dive into this? What was it that started all of this for you?
Yeah, so it actually started in my early 20s. There was something that registered on my radar. So I had a dear friend of mine, Sophie. She had a really traumatic childhood, and she was always full of negativity, full of self-doubt. She never really knew what she wanted. She was always a little bit of a drag, if I'm to be honest. But she's so sweet, such a great young lady. And she went actually on a month-long ayahuasca retreat when I think she would have been 20. I was 22 at the time. And she came back a whole different human. Like, mm-hmm. It was just incredible. She was motivated. She was excited. She was positive. She was organizing camping trips here and rock climbing there and surfing there and trips to the park for picnics. And it was just like, wow, who are you? Uh-huh. And so that registered quite deep. I wasn't ready for anything like that myself, but it registered pretty deep. I was like, okay, there's something there that doesn't resonate, or that doesn't reflect my experience with substances as a child growing up in Hawaii. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I guess I was probably 31 in Hong Kong. And, you know, I was working like a dog. I was up at 6:30, in the office by 7, you know, leave the office by 10 p.m. at night, you know, go have a few too many drinks, pass out, and then just wake up and be back in the office by 7 a.m. again. Mm-hmm. And I was on this loop for quite a few years in Hong Kong. And I was having fun, you know, on one level, I was, you know, achieving at work, and I had a whole bunch of different clients working with very exciting, you know, global multinational technology clients, digital strategy, digital transformation, big teams. You know, everyone was on this incredible steep learning curve. I had great friends. You know, Hong Kong is such an energetic, I mean, it's incredible. When Hong Kong is on, like, people are like, oh, have you ever been to Vegas? I'm like, forget Vegas. Have you ever been to Hong Kong? Like, it is just, the energy is just on a whole nother level. Yeah. So it was, you know, it was really energizing. But after close to 5 years on that hamster wheel, I was like, there's gotta be more to life. I just fundamentally felt like something was missing. I just didn't know what it was. And so I'm like, all right, I'm just going to hit the pause button, even though I've got so many good things going on in my life here in Hong Kong. And I don't know what I'm looking for, but I'm going looking. And so I took a year off and I traveled through South America. And as part of that, it was actually a couple friends of mine reached out and they're like, hey, you know, you're traveling around South America. Why don't we go do a stint together in Peru and do some hiking up in the Andes? And through that process, one of my buddies is like, hey, we should do an ayahuasca retreat. I've heard good things. And then, you know, that kind of connected back with my memory of Sophie and mm-hmm. the transformation that she had. And I was like, yeah, okay, let's do it. And so that really sparked the first experience. And then, you know, subsequently, as I began to work with different retreat centers and, you know, deepen my own spiritual and meditative practice, I began to see those shifts. And so the motivation began to build. You know, initially I wanted to do this business model under a similar to kind of a Vipassana meditation business model, sort of pay it forward business model, whereby if you've had a really transformative experience, then that's how then you should pay it forward to others so that it can work that way. Mm-hmm. That isn't the right model for this work, because with Vipassana, you're dedicating yourself to 10 days of silence. And for most people, that's like an inconceivable commitment. Whereas with this work, it's very important that people make a significant energetic contribution or a commitment, you know, and often, you know, money is kind of our reflection of how we exchange energy, right? How we make energetic commitments to one another. And so I had started that with some of my friends, inviting them and facilitating and hosting retreats. And then I was speaking to someone who's a real expert in this space, and they're like, you got to stop doing that. You have to start charging your friends. And I was like, what are you talking about? I'm you know, I'm spreading the love. And they're like, no. See how much, you know, the next time you do a retreat, charge your friends and see how much more they get out of it. And they were so right. Like the moment that I started charging my friends in alignment with, you know, what I knew that they would value the experience at, they began to make such bigger shifts in such a shorter space of time. And I was like, okay, now I get it. It's because that commitment is there, which that energetic exchange is there. And so they're coming into this with a very different sort of perspective, because they're looking to have that energy reciprocated, right? And we're talking about spiritual work where it's all about energetic reciprocation. And so the moment they begin to make a commitment to themselves, that's actually what the commitment is, right? It's not paying money to me. What's actually happening is they're making a significant commitment to themselves, and the plants and the spiritual world and the practitioners and everything around that is reciprocating that energetic commitment.
Yeah, absolutely. I actually have, I don't know if I mentioned you before, but I've done a ayahuasca with a shaman that came in from Peru, and it was in, you know, like a, you were mentioning like a, you know, little yoga studio kind of a setup, and very interesting. We could talk a lot about that. But one of the really good things that they said was you begin the journey the moment you decide to begin the journey, you know, like it's already begun the moment you decided. And it's so true. As soon as I said, okay, I'm doing this, and you have to stick to the diet and the, you know, cutting, you know, red meat and sugar and all these things, and sex, you know, even 3 days before and all of these things, I was like, wow, I haven't even taken this substance yet. And I already am feeling, you know, the movement of energy that I have never felt before. So it's,
you know, it's incredible that what you've just said has just sent chills down my spine, because what you said and the way that you said it is almost a precisely how my spiritual mentors told me this when they first told me it. And I was like, and some of the stories that they've shared with me are staggering in terms of, they do this work at a very high level. So they charge, I continue to be a client of theirs. They charge between 50K and 100K US to work with them privately. And it's, I mean, it's, when I first heard that, I fell out of the chair, right? I was like, you what? But I mean, it's absolutely unquestionably the best money that I've ever spent in my life. And what they told me is that even though, you know, we're going to start working with you now, but we're not going to do plants until, you know, further down the road, they say, but you're going to begin to see big shifts immediately. And then they began to tell me some of the stories they've had with their other clients, where there's been even, you know, periods of say 3-6 months before they actually have any ceremonies with their clients, because they often travel to their clients, or their clients travel to them. And what they said is, like, they were sharing stories of like people having these dramatic, massive shifts just from the moment that they've made the financial commitment, like, you know, big deals coming through for their business that were order of magnitudes bigger than they've ever had before, and you know, blah, blah, blah. So it's really incredible what aligns for you. I'd love to hear more about your experience, Adrian, if you'd like to go into that.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I've shared, you know, bits of it on previous episodes, but I'm happy to talk about it again. It was with a good friend of mine from school, actually, and he'd been working on like shaman apprenticeship classes through this shaman that was locally, actually, and by our school, funny enough, 30 minutes away in the suburbs of Chicago. And, you know, really, when I first said I want to try ayahuasca, I said, I'm not doing it unless I go down to the rainforest and, you know, the Amazon and really experience it the right way and where it's from and all of that. And then I got this opportunity and it just felt right, you know, so I followed my intuition And I went with it, and it actually ended up being a wonderful experience. I feel like they really did a great job. It was a guy and a girl kind of like partner, female, male, you know, shaman team, which was beautiful. And they really held the space well. And, you know, they prepared us well with the mapacho tobacco and, you know, multiple times and with the, I forgot what it was called, but up the nose and each nostril. And, you know, lots of, I said, wow, this is taking a long time before we even drink this. It's like hours are going by. What is happening? You know? And I'm, you know, impatient. Like you said, I'm impatient for sure is one of my things I could work on. And then we, you know, took the first dose and then we're sitting there and we're waiting. And I'm like, I don't feel anything. And then they call up for the second dose. And I'm like, okay, well, I don't know if I should do this, but you know, why not? My friend's doing it, so I'll do it. And then I take that and then I sit down and then they start to play their instruments and sing. And I was like, oh, I see what's going on here. And literally I heard that before, but I felt it. The music truly activates this medicine in some magical way that there's no words for, really. I mean, it's like I've heard people say, how do you describe your ayahuasca experience? You really can't. You know, how do you describe having an orgasm to somebody that's never had one, or being in love to somebody that's never been in love? Like, it's very difficult. So that's what I've heard ayahuasca compared to. And I would agree. It's just something you need to experience. But it was the most terrifying experience in my life, honestly, of all the psychedelic experiences I've had. It was insane. I thought I was going to die. Like and the female shaman was like, well, there's a reason they call it the vine of the dead.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, you know, and, I experienced that fear of death and that ego death, you could call it. And then after that, it was just the most beautiful, you know, experience. They allowed us to bring our own instruments and I'm into drumming, like hand drumming, like the djembe. And so I brought that and we were all kind of playing together and just, you know, had some beautiful visuals, open eye, closed eye, and just, you know, what the most powerful experience for me is I was going through a lot of stuff at the time with my girlfriend and with the family and all of that. And I saw, I was able to see from her parents' perspectives, the situation, like I was her parents and I was like, oh, wow. You know, you've gone through so much pain and there's so much hurt, you know, that quote, hurt people.
Yeah.
And I really felt that. I'm like, oh, I have so much more compassion now for these people and for myself and going through this and just for everybody. And then it was a wild experience in that people in going through the ceremony as well. One of them was having a really difficult time, you know, and I said, she's screaming and swearing and what the hell, what, nonstop for hours. And I even asked at one point, what's going on, you know, with her. And they said, well, she's got a lot of traumas, you know, that she's working through. And it was just like, wow, you know, being in that room with her there, it was able to feel that pain that she was going through. And that was, you know, there's a reason why they do these ceremonies in groups oftentimes is, you know, there's something to that group power, you know, multiplied healing effect. And so, I mean, that's a summary version of it. You know how there's layers and layers and layers to them always. But the one thing I would say is the integration was just the next morning, let's all go around and talk about it. And that was about where it ended. And have a nice day and see you later, you know? I was like, oh, okay. You know, so that was kind of lacking for sure. Now that I learned more about this space and, you know, what kind of real integration can look like. So that was my only ayahuasca experience. I've had multiple other psilocybin experiences, some LSD, you know, MDMA and things like that. But ayahuasca is the one time. And it was like I got a little sampling, you know, of the plan. Okay, I see what's here, and I know that there's so much more work to be done. I want to go down to the Amazon, of course, and hopefully, working with Behold and, you know, and facilitating that. And so.
Wow. Thank you for sharing. Well, it sounds like you found your way to a pretty good experience, which is super fortunate. It's not always the case, and it sounds like you had an incredible journey. I mean, for that to be your first is exceptional. To be perfectly frank, as per the lady along with you, that's super super common, right? It's unfortunate that we have this intergenerational trauma dynamic going on, whereby we, pretty much we're all traumatized as children to a greater or lesser extent. And so, part of my own healing journey was uncovering completely suppressed trauma from childhood. I was super lucky, right? I had loving parents that were very protective, and like they did everything right. They did everything they possibly could have done right. And yet still I was traumatized as a child, and I had memories that were so far hidden away from my everyday waking consciousness that were manifesting. Some people say, oh, well, why would you go dig into that? And it's like, well, make no mistake, those traumatic experiences are manifesting in your character today, whether that's anger, impatience, frustration, any other, any of those lower level emotions that are keeping you from your true potential, generally have a grounding in either past trauma or limiting beliefs and behaviors that have become so ingrained with your identity that they're very difficult to let those things go. Mm-hmm. And so, that's a large part of this work, is like helping, guiding people to see, okay, if you're living in scarcity, right? If money is a consistent issue, it's because of your mental patterns, right? It's because of the way that you're thinking about these things. And, at first I was, when people first started pushing me on the subject, I was like, it's hard for me to engage in that because I'm a pretty liberal person and I believe we should all be looking after one another and, these sorts of things. And it's like, no. When it comes to abundance, it's really easy about your mindset and mentality. And so, that was one of those many subjects that I was guided upon in terms of like shifting the perspective in relation to abundance and creation and patience and empathy and courage and all of these sorts of, inherent human traits that we all have. And we all have, super special gifts and unique traits to bring into the world. But this trauma and these limiting beliefs that we have come to build into our character need to be released. And it really does take a lot to be able to identify it. A lot of people are having these journeys without having actually identified the core problem. And so these journeys can actually bypass, the ego is incredibly sneaky and incredibly capable at keeping you away from the core of the issue. And so you can go off and have this, God consciousness, super transcendent, I am the universe sort of experience, and not having dealt with some of the basic fundamentals around, self-love and, limiting beliefs and mental patterns and all of that sort of stuff. And so, sometimes we've had a few clients, it's been surprising to me, like some people have come to us and be like, okay, well, I've done, it's fun. Money, it kind of becomes a matter of pride and ego. They're like, well, I've already done 200 ceremonies. And you can tell that like, they're like, okay, wow, now you really need help because you've already used this incredibly powerful tool to such an extent, but you've missed this core of work around the mental and the emotional side of things. And so, honestly speaking, our coaches are like, when those clients come to us, honestly speaking, they're like, we got to think very carefully about whether we want to work with this person. Cause we really want to have 100% success rate with clients, but the amount of work that those people need is actually significantly more complex and demanding than those who have never had a psychedelic experience, of course.
Right. Yeah. I could see that. Yeah. And I wanted to add too, one thing for my journey that was, interesting. I'm not sure how common it is, but I'm really into water fasting, water only fasting. And I did a 3-day water fast before I did my ayahuasca ceremony. So I went into it fasting, and I told the shaman that in the little interview before, and he's like, oh, the medicine will work very deep with you.
Wow. Sure did. Yeah. If I may ask, just because I know if there's listeners, did you fast and then eat again, or did you come in completely fasted?
Completely fasted. Yeah, I didn't eat at all. And I'd ask them about that, and they said, yeah, it's it'll go great. That was the only thing I had ingested for those 3 days. And then at the nighttime of the third day is when we took the ayahuasca.
Yeah. Wow.
And I'm very experienced with water fasting. You know, I wouldn't recommend that probably the first time. You know, I've done up to a 14-day water fast. So, you know, obviously I'm a naturopathic doctor, so I know what to watch out for, and I wouldn't recommend more than like a 3-day water fast on your own, you know, without medical supervision. But totally. Yeah, it's a very powerful therapy. So I'm all about the combinations of different therapies. So I thought I'd try it out, and it worked out well.
Yeah. I mean, water fasting is so powerful in of itself. Right. And what we would generally recommend to clients is that if they're inclined to do something like you did, is that they actually do a water fast, say, 3 or 4, they actually end the water fast a few days before the journey, so that they can gain some of that energy back. Because again, the experience is like, you know, yourself, you're obviously experienced in this regard, but for people who haven't done so much fasting, ayahuasca can be very physically demanding, right? And so we want to have those energy reserves on call, should we need them to deal with some very challenging physical manifestation. So if you're fasted and depleted, that can be be suboptimal.
Absolutely, yeah. Especially with the purging that can happen, you know, and losing of fluids, where you know it's unlikely you're going to be sitting there hydrating. So yeah, not recommended probably. So what is your opinion really with psychedelics and kind of the broader future of healthcare and mental health and kind of how it integrates with psychedelics? How do you see all that going?
Yeah. How much time you got? the thing I always say is, God, we're in an exciting time to be alive. Because, you know, like I said before, like my parents were trying to share with me some of their wisdom from a young age, and I was rejecting a lot of what they had to say.
Right.
And I think what we will bear witness to is convergence on so many different levels it's going to happen so quickly that our heads are going to spin.
Yeah.
You know, at the moment we've got so many separations in relation to health and well-being and human potential. And I think this particular tool is going to radically accelerate the convergence of so many different things, right? So it's already doing that in terms of the convergence between science and spirituality, right? Where now, you know, quantum physics is now able to confirm the spiritual truths that mystics have been telling us for millennia, which is interesting. We see these psychedelic research centers, they're at the beginnings of their work, and they know that. And so if there's 20 layers to the onion in relation to consciousness and the human experience and the nature of the universe and the relationship between those things, then, you know, the research at the moment is focused on like, how do we get people predominantly, you know, focused upon how do we get people from, below zero back up to zero, which is a little bit of a limitation in terms of the quality of the conversation in my mind, because we've just set this kind of relatively nonsensical bar. And anyone who's below the bar has a mental health problem, and anyone who's above the bar is doing okay. And it's like, that's really not what this is. Like, you know, we understand that human beings can become enlightened, and that these medicines are able to move you further and further along, you know, through the states of consciousness towards, you know, much higher level emotions like love and joy and peace, and ultimately, you know, even greater and more transcendent than that. Mm-hmm. And so, why is the conversation being dominated by getting back to zero, when what we should be really focused on, that's what we're trying to do with Behold Retreats, is let's take the people who are performing at the absolute, you know, highest level and get them performing at an even higher level. Because the moment that their motivation shifts away from me and into I'm going to try and help more people lift their game, is when we get that exponential kind of, you know, relationship between our ability to help ourselves and our ability to help other people. So I think we're seeing this super exciting convergence between science and spirituality. I think we're going to have this convergence. I'm going to start rattling these off and then you can guide the conversation as sure. you wish. I think we're going to see a convergence between, traditional medicines and the Western medical medicines, right? Yep. And that's part of what this work represents. I think we're going to see a convergence between, people who are focused on helping people make people better through therapy or coaching, and people who are focused on plant medicine. I think those worlds will also come together. You know, one of the areas of focus for me has been, meeting with people such as yourselves that are naturopathic practitioners, executive coaches, and seeing, you know, what does that intersection look like at the moment? And so I think, you know, we're moving to this more of a holistic wellness model and a move towards taking back our individual responsibility for our health outcomes. You know, I think we've lived through a period whereby, you know, we haven't really been taking health that seriously. You know, we've been eating, if you go into a typical supermarket and look around on the shelves, you're just going, what on earth is going on here? Like, yeah. There's a few small sections of food, and then like you're going like, wow, look at all this stuff. Like, what is this? Yeah. And so I think we're in the midst of a big transition there in relation to taking back personal responsibility. And I think this work is equally about self-empowerment and non-aggression, right? And I think there's this real massive convergence between these different areas that are going to bring us towards a much deeper and fundamentally different understanding of what health and well-being and human potential looks like. And I think it's very exciting because it's going to be brought to us by virtue of natural plants. And so when you ask me the question, you know, what do I think about the broader psychedelic scene? I mean, I've never seen so much dysfunction in my life that I have in relation to psychedelics and the ecosystem and the industry and people who are trying to defend, you know, their patch of land or their way of doing, and they're this and they're that. In fairness, I've been a bit critical of some ways that some things are happening in there. But I think ultimately speaking, things always evolve as they should. If people are doing things in one way that has a natural limit to it, then mm-hmm. people will come to that natural limit. They will hear about something else that's better. And then the energy will begin to shift again in the direction of the something better. So like people are like, oh, well, you know, we have to stop all this, you know, synthetic work, and we have to stop this, you know, psychedelic innovation, and this is the right way to do it. And you have to honor the traditions, and you have to do this. And there's 1,001 people out there telling you what you need to do in order to be, to have a voice in the psychedelic industry, because, it's so dysfunctional. It's like, look, universal love, you know, we've all had this transcendent universal love experience. What part of that are you struggling to bring back? And look, let's continue to do our own work, which we all have to do. And mm-hmm. let's continue to bring the beautiful energy that we want into the world. And yes, some people are going to come into this trying to make billions of dollars. And yes, you know, some people are going to try to control everything. But let's just recognize that for what it is. Let's try and meet those people. Let's try and make good connections with them. Let's encourage them to do more of their own work so that they're coming back into this with a different sort of an energy. And let's not try to be so judgmental. Let's not try to be too negative. Let's try and allow this industry to unfold in such a way that really betters the individual and collective consciousness.
Yeah. Well said. I agree 100%. And that's why we're here recording this, because I agree with your mission, and I want to help spread that to as many people that are willing to listen. So love it. And I wanted to quickly backtrack to when you mentioned the Vipassana meditation retreat model. That's interesting. Have you attended one of those retreats yourself in the past, the 10-day?
Yeah.
Yeah, same. They're incredible. I have as well.
How was your experience?
It was great. I mean, it was really intense. And this was before I ever have done any psychedelics. So it's interesting that this was like my first psychedelic experience, I would call it. You know, I really, it's that whole analogy of, climbing up the mountain, walking up the mountain is like through meditation and breath work and all that stuff. And psychedelics are like taking a helicopter ride to the top. You know, I really saw that it is possible through meditation, you know, all these things that these states of mind are being experienced. And I got little glimpses of that because I got that confirmation in my future psychedelic experiences. I had those moments where I'm like, oh, I feel exactly like I felt when I was meditating in the meditation retreat. You know, it's the same parts of the brain activated, that default mode network, you know? So there's so much at that intersection there of meditation and psychedelics.
Totally. Totally. And that default mode network is so fundamental to how it is that we've allowed ourselves to become separated. And, you know, Adrian, I'm so glad that you raised that actually, because I think it can lead this conversation in a couple of interesting directions. You know, I think there's still a lot of people out there who believe that plant medicine represents something like an unearned growth in consciousness, which I think is actually a really interesting, it's an interesting thought to consider. Because you know, it really does accelerate your access to so much more so quickly that it can be very overwhelming, right? Mm-hmm. There's some interesting research that should be forthcoming. I'm told this year, it could be early next year, that is looking to try to provide deeper evidence for what's called the stoned ape theory. I don't know if you've ever heard that before, which is kind of this concept that actually it could be that our brains have fundamentally co-evolved alongside with these plant medicines. So it's not that plant medicine does interesting stuff to your brain. It's that your brain is interesting in large part as a result of plant medicine, which I think could really begin to speed up the narrative and the conversation if that work turns out to have some truth to it. And the other interesting dynamic in relation to this is that, you know, there's still a lot of spiritual mentors, spiritual teachers out there who have clearly done incredible work and are operating from a very high level who are anti-plants. And, you know, even in fact, you know, a lot of the spiritual, a lot of the plant medicine people who I really highly regard that I've met over the years, they often have teachers that are anti-plants. And so there's a little bit of a divide and a disconnect that they're like, yeah, even though I've gotten so much from this spiritual teacher, that's one thing that I actually keep away from our conversation. I'm like, wow, that's so interesting. Wow. Here you've got this like super deep mentoring, you know, relationship and spiritual connection, which is all knowing, all free, all loving. And yet you're like, oh yeah, but I don't tell them about the plant thing because they're not really there. And what's interesting is that I have not yet met someone who has worked with plants in a very deep way and still and then has come from that and said, oh yeah, I'm against these plants now. So you just don't tend to find people that have done, you know, serious, meaningful, conscious work with plants and then come out of that. So I think this whole space is quite interesting in that regard.
Mm-hmm, definitely. Yeah. I mean, you mentioned, you know, the idea of psychedelics and kind of helping with figuring out whether stoned ape theory or kind of just, it's a mystery in science how our brains doubled in size, you know, over a certain amount of years. And stoned ape theory is one of the ones that explains it pretty well. And it makes a lot of sense because with LSD in the past and the research they've done in psychiatry, they were able to discover our serotonin system because of that. You know, so it's like this psychedelic, they're studying it for these reasons, but because of that, we learned about how serotonin and all that works in our body. So there's so much, you know, to be discovered there. Like that quote, I forgot who said it, but that psychedelics are like the microscope to biology or the telescope to astronomy. That's what they are to the study of our mind. And I truly believe that.
Yeah, I think that was a Stan Grof quote. He's amazing. And, you know, it's interesting, you know, that massive growth that we've experienced in our prefrontal cortex over the past 200,000 years. The other dynamic, someone was sharing with me, you know, we're the only mammal that really struggles with birth. And that's because of our massive prefrontal cortex. So we've clearly gone on this, you know, radically different evolutionary path than the animals that are around us. And, you know, as a result of that, you hear stories of poor mothers in labor for 6 hours. I mean, if you look at what's happening in the animal kingdom more broadly, I mean, it's not nearly so challenging and traumatic an experience as it is for our species. So it's, you know, this massive growth in our mental capacities is definitely real, but it's also come at a bit of a cost in that regard.
Interesting. Yeah, I hadn't heard that. That's very interesting. So how would you best explain how psychedelics exactly are helping to raise consciousness? And then what are your thoughts on like the other routes of raising consciousness, and how do those all blend together? You know?
Yeah. So there's a CIA paper that explains the nature of the universe, and it was written in 1983. You can find it on the CIA website. I'll send it to you if you're interested, so you can include it in your show notes. I'm going to kind of, there's many layers to the psychedelic onion, trying to get into the middle layer here. Mm-hmm. And so the ultimate truth is that, as is reflected in the CIA paper, is that the universe is a matrix of consciousness. When we're talking about consciousness, what I think we're really talking about is that we're understanding the relationship between the universe as a whole and ourselves. And so elevating your consciousness is improving your understanding of the nature of the universe, in essence. I think there is sort of a experiential component to that, as well as a integrated component to that, if you will. So you might go and have some sort of super transcendent experience whereby you experience universal love or the interconnectivity of all things or the profundity of life or creation. And, you know, there's many, many kind of consistent levels of experiences that people have. Of course, each experience is unique, but mm-hmm. you know, there's very common themes in terms of a heightened level of consciousness actually reflects a you know, common set of experiences, if that makes mm-hmm. sense. Mm-hmm. And so you can go and have this experience, but then it's equally easy to go straight back to the level of consciousness that you are at. And there's very many reasons behind that. And so that's what we're, you know, some of what we were speaking about before is like, you haven't done some of the self work, you haven't done the emotional, the mental side of things. And so, you know, people can have these incredible blast offs, if you will, right. and then come and land straight back where they were. And it's like, oh no, that's not what we wanted. Like, that's right. really not what we wanted. And so expert guidance, and I mean, the human condition is so complex. You know, we just talked about ayahuasca having 463 different compounds. I think we can see that we've got a relatively complex universe around us. And so when you bring, you know, the complexity of yourself, the universe, and this medicine together, I mean, the breadth of experiences, whether they be, you know, sensual or, you know, there's just so much complexity there that expert guidance is absolutely required in order for you to be able to navigate the depths of your subconscious, clear out some of the muck that's accumulated there, begin to reconnect your neurology, reconnect your mind, body, heart, and spirit in the ways that they should be connected, which is, you know, much more aligned to some of the more ancient wisdom, certainly, than it is to our Western medical understanding, mm-hmm. as I now appreciate it. And so through that expert guidance and through healers and the mental and emotional work, we can, as we're coming down from one of those experiences, we can actually, you know, level out at a higher level of consciousness and begin to live that experience, to live from that higher level of consciousness instead of kind of landing back where you were. So I think I've answered the first part of that question to some extent. Definitely can never be answered fully. But right. Remind me again, what was the second part?
Yeah, just your thoughts on like the other routes to raising consciousness, meditation and breath work and all of those different things. How do they all, you know, intertwine together?
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, a large part of this work with plant medicine should be about finding a sustainable path for your own mental health and well-being and establishing your own practice in relation to that, right? It should not be, in my mind, that you go and do an ayahuasca retreat and then you go, oh, I'll do another one in 3 months. And then that 3 months in between, you're just kind of living your life. It's like, no. This is about elevating consciousness as a practice. Like that is something that you can do in your everyday life, right? So you would have come out of this retreat, hopefully with a long list of things that you imagine in your future self, right? And that's where creation really begins. It's like, okay, I've had this experience and now I imagine my future self as, I don't know, maybe he's making $100 million. Maybe he's found the love of his life. Maybe he's adopting stray cats from around the neighborhood. I don't know what it is, right? But Yeah. But you've got this better version of yourself in your mind. And hopefully you've taken the time to write that down in your notebook. And now what you want to do is to establish that daily practice that is going to allow you to begin to evolve that, because that future self will continue to evolve. And so taking an hour every morning, or even if you can, I have friends that 2-3 hours every morning, daily practice. And you know, that's meditation, breath work, yoga, journaling, all of those sorts of good things, because they're like, you know, I'm so much better. If I do 3 hours of work after I've done 3 hours of my practice in a really beautiful brunch, like that's me. That's how I'm the most productive, is if I do 3 hours of really high quality work. And, you know, that's a lot of people who are operating from a higher level of consciousness. They are not pulling 12-hour days. Absolutely not. Like it just does not happen. They're pulling 4-hour days. They're pulling 3-hour days, and they're in flow, and there's no separation between, like, they don't even often use the word work. They tend to often use the word play, right? They're like, oh yeah, we're going to go play and do this. And because there's that separation is no longer there. And so I think everyone finds the practice that works for them. But you know, absolutely, I would encourage everyone to think about breath work, meditation, and yoga, or other forms of exercise and contemplative practices that resonate, other spiritual practices. You know, we've all got, but we've all got limitations as well. And so, you know, whether it's trying to be mindful, I think when you're driving in your car, incredible time. Like, you know, America, for all of its blessings, has a very car-based lifestyle. Yeah. And so you can do emotional processing while you're in the car. You can do, you know, open eye meditation while keeping very focused. There's a lot of things that you can do to really improve your mindfulness and your level of consciousness throughout the day, you know, and every moment is an opportunity for sure. It's just nice to have a little me time as well for those people who are able to take it and make it.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, yeah, it's like they say, it's easy to be calm and chill when you're meditating on the cushion, but what do you do when there's that traffic jam and you have that opportunity to be upset, or that opportunity for mindfulness, you know, and just, okay, this is where I get to put my practice into use, you know?
Yeah. And, you know, there's the Vipassana guru, S.N. Goenka, mm-hmm. he's got this great piece that I love, which speaks about the exponential return on identification of those points in time, right? So we all have these things that, you know, raise a trigger, right? So whether there's something that's like, oh, okay, so there's this point of contraction, right, that we feel mentally and physically, that is like, uh-huh. hurt. And just, you know, what Goenka says that I absolutely love is that, okay, let's say that you got angry, but let's say you, through the course of this year, you achieve a 5% reduction in the amount of time that you're angry. So you get angry, right? Fine. Mm-hmm. But imagine instead of 100% this year, you bring that down to 95% of the time. So if you were going to be angry about this for 8 hours, now you're angry about it for 7 hours and 40 minutes. Mm-hmm. He goes, now imagine if you're able to do that again next year. And he goes, you know, 5% is just such a minor little change, right? And so, but he speaks about this, you know, it's the cumulative interest, right? Mm-hmm. From an emotional perspective. And so as we come to identify and recognize and process faster and get back to our own equilibrium, regardless of the negative emotional state that we find ourselves in, that's where, you know, there's just massive, massive potential. And then when you see it, and not only do you see that you've been able to shorten the span at which you are in a contracted state, but you're also able to see the benefit to your own quality of experience as you go and apologize to your girlfriend or your wife sooner than you would have, and that you're actually out for a beautiful dinner down by the water and, you know, choosing over a glass of wine, whereas you would have been, you know, stuck on the iPad in the separate bedroom. It's like, yeah. All right, so this has really real benefits to my quality of life now that I'm able to overcome some of my emotional shortcomings, as it were.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, another good analogy is like, working out in the gym. You know, you can't expect to, you know, you're strengthening your body, you know, it's not overnight, and you're strengthening your mind, it's certainly not going to be overnight either. You know, you can't expect to go to the gym and lift some weights and then you're going to be huge the next day. It doesn't work that way.
Yeah.
So why would you expect that with your mind? You know, it's incremental, tiny little things you might not even notice over the time, but then you see somebody maybe you haven't seen in a while, they're like, oh, you look really good. Wow. Or, you know, and same thing with your mind. Wow, you seem a lot more calm and centered. And, well, exactly. You know,
that's it. And you know, I speak. The word exponential is such a buzzword these days. But I think in relation to this work in raising consciousness, it has a place, and it has a place as well in relation to how we do our own work in. You know, as you just said, the moment that someone recognizes that you've changed is the moment that they are thinking about changes they might like in themselves, right? Because, and that's where the exponential sits. Because if you are impacting five, let's just say five people significantly, right? And you know, we all have closer and more distant friendships, but let's say that there's five people that you are really close with. Mm-hmm. And the moment they see you make a big shift and that they are experiencing the benefits of that shift is the moment they go, okay, so let's talk about that shift. What happened there? How did you do it? And they've taken a greater interest in having their own shift. They might not be inclined to go do a month long ayahuasca retreat with mud under their eyes. But they're definitely going to be inclined. They're interested to know what you've been reading. Okay, breath work. Okay, this, that. And so, you know, I think that's really where, given where we find ourselves and the temptation to point fingers in other directions, particularly in one of the very many countries that we have in this world. I love America, right? I think Americans have so much to bring to this world. I grew up there. I absolutely love the US, but one of the things that I see there is that there's a very quick response to find the source of the problem. It's very seldom is it inside. It's an external problem. Right. And so it's like, no, that's not it. It's your response to the problem that is the problem. And so as we all come to recognize this, then that's where the exponential sits, because it's like, you know, Gandhi said it, and it's 100% that be the change you wish to see in this world. And he's the perfect example, right? Here's one guy who, you know, took a nonviolent approach, had a very simple and clear narrative about what he was trying to achieve and why he was trying to achieve it, and inspired hundreds of millions of people to overthrow the empire and gain the independence from Britain for India. I mean, this is just one guy operating from a higher level of consciousness. And so when we think about the potential for more and more people to reach these states and to begin to bring movements around non-aggression and movements around, you know, individual empowerment and holistic health and all of these beautiful and amazing topics, it's very, very exciting.
Yes, I agree. I agree. I share your excitement. And I think we're just scratching the surface. You know, it's such an exciting time to be alive, like you said. And really, I mean, just mark this point right now, January 7th, 2021, and imagine our world in 2031. I mean, how unbelievably different, and I think a lot more beautiful it'll be.
Yeah, absolutely. And for the sake of posterity, it's also worth recognizing the gentleman in horns that we had break into the Capitol building yesterday, yeah. which is incredible. Like, it's just like the whole world is looking at that and just going, what?
Yeah, I don't know whether to laugh or to cry or to. it's quite entertainment right now, being in America and watching this stuff unfold. And yeah, it's really interesting. Yeah. But I wanted to ask you. I'm sure you're familiar with that Alan Watts quote. You know, once you get the message, you can hang up the phone. you know, as related to psychedelics. Do you kind of resonate with that? And have you seen that with the clients you've had come through with the retreats? Or is it something where it's more of a maintenance kind of, you have to every so often do another retreat, do something? Or is it kind of like you've seen people, they get the message, they're done with medicines and retreats, and that's it? What, how have you seen that work out?
Yeah. I've seen it work out and not work out in many different ways. Right. So the first retreat center I went to in Peru, they sort of kind of wheeled in the owner of the retreat center. It's almost like someone was working the arms from behind. This guy had clearly done some quite significant damage to himself, unfortunately. And so I think that comes from intensity, right? There's a lot of people who, humans love intensity, right? I mean, I don't know if you followed this guy in the Himalayas who just went and climbed like 4 of the peaks in 6 days, including Everest.
Whoa.
It's just incredible. And like no one had ever, I think it was like no one had ever done 2 within a week or something like that. Like no one had ever, and he went and did 4 in 6 days. It was just like, what are you talking about? So, you know, the human potential, like we're really, it's incredible. Again, it's an incredible time to be alive because people are finding these niches to push and demonstrate human potential in ways that are just like, what is going on here? And it's unfortunate, one unfortunate dynamic in relation to our desire for intensity is you can really hurt yourself. You know, like I think there's an, you may know this guy, David Goggins, right? He seems like an incredible human being, right? I'm not taking anything away from him. Like he's able to handle intensity, the likes of which I hope I never know. But it's like, wow, okay. That's, you're really pushing there. And I'd love to see how he reflects upon that now these days. Cause I think he's, you know, he'd really hurt himself in some ways. Right. And it's really possible to hurt yourself in with plant medicine. And I think that really needs to be looked at. You know, we're at such a delicate stage in relation to this work because people are discovering that there are more intense psychedelics out there.
Right.
And so journalists are getting hold of this. Journalists love a story about human intensity. They just love it. And unfortunately, there's all sorts of media that's coming out that is so poorly researched. The journalists have no idea what they're talking about. They know there's a huge story here and they're just launching into it. They're speaking to a couple of people, they're writing it, and then they're publishing it on their website. This is critically dangerous.
Yeah.
Critically dangerous. It's been interesting because I've been pushing this subject in Asia, and the stories that have ended up in the media, I was just like, oh my God, that's not it.
Yeah.
but you know, there's a journalistic integrity, which is important, right? Which is journalists can write whatever they want to write. That is what journalism is. And so I'm like, I'm offering to journalists, I'm like, hey, if you'd like me to have a look, if you'd like me to connect you to a third party for review of this paper, this guy who works in PR, he comes from MAPS. He's a super high integrity guy, Brad Burge. Brad's amazing. I was like, let me connect you to Brad, get a third party perspective on what you're going to do before you launch it into the media. Like, no, I'm just going to write what I want. It's just like, oh God, here we go again. And so, yeah, we're at a very delicate stage in relation to this work because, you know, I spoke with this beautiful coach a couple of weeks ago, you know, mother of 3. And she's like, oh yeah, I'm going to go do this ceremony with the Bufo, which is a very powerful, very, very powerful medicine. You know, personally, I would only trust a handful of people on this planet to facilitate me through such an experience as that. And now like this is another one that's taken hold and people are like, oh, I'm going to do this. And it's just like, people are doing this for their first experience. I'm like, look, you are about to launch the rocket ship without having any of the tools to even point it skyward. You're just launching. You have no basis, no compass for the world that you're about to enter, and you're really trying to get to Mars before even floating down the river. It's just like, oh my God, what is going on here? And so bringing that back to your question around people's paths, I would encourage people to start cautiously, start slowly. There's no huge rush, right? There's some people, one of the ladies that I was in my first retreat with, 63 years old, she had an incredibly challenging journey. She saw all of her grandchildren die in the worst possible way, one by one by one. She saw then her children die one by one by one, then her husband. And so the next day she was apoplectic. Like she couldn't even raise her head. Her hair was hanging down across her face. Mm. Now, within the space of 24 hours, she turned that experience into eradication of every single one of her fears. She was able to see how she was such an overbearing human being that she was scaring away her grandchildren. She was scaring away her children. Nobody wanted to be with her because she was so full of fear all of the time. So mm-hmm. by virtue of having experienced everyone dying in the worst possible way, in a sense, all of her worst nightmares had been manifested. And now she could come back and bring this completely different energy to her mothering and her grandmothering. And she was so excited about that. And she said, I don't think I'll ever do another one of these retreats again, because I've just gotten everything that I could ever possibly imagine out of this experience. Mm-hmm. And it's like, okay, well, that might be the right thing for her. Right. Other people are like, I'm going to stay here for another month, and I'm canceling all of the life plans that I had, and I need to go deep here and now. And so it really depends upon the individual in terms of where they'd like to go. There's people that I know that have been doing this work for two decades in a very intense way, but they know the mind, body, heart, and soul. And so they're able to do it intensely as well as safely,
right?
And are still doing this work. And so they're, what they know about the nature of the universe is just like, right? There's so many decades ahead of where the vast majority of us are. Mm-hmm. And they're still continuing to do this work. So it really, really depends upon the individual and their own journey and whether they found the expert guidance. I think that is, I think a lot of this relates to, have you found the right persons that can guide you through this? Because, leave your trial and error. Leave your trial and error to baking cookies. Like that, it's perfect for baking cookies, right? I'm gonna add a little bit more chocolate chips into this, and it's like, yeah, this. We're talking about your body, mind, heart, and soul, and like experiencing the nature of the universe. Do not leave this to trial and error. Like, do take right. this pretty seriously.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a funny analogy, and it's so true, and it's the difference between recreational use of these, medicines and plants and. Substances and versus the healing, intention behind it. It's interesting. I think it can be a blurry line sometimes. I'm not going to say I haven't gotten some phenomenal healing and experiences from having MDMA at a music festival, and that talk totally. About that feeling of love and unification and just everything all around you. I mean, unbelievable. I say all the time, if everybody in the world got to experience MDMA in a music festival, it'd be a different world.
Yeah. Yeah. I've done the same, and it's like such a transcendent and amazing experience. But mm-hmm. then you also, people go with a group that aren't particularly close with. They right. take MDMA, a whole bunch of their trauma comes back up. All of a sudden, they're off in the corner of the festival, reliving all of their childhood trauma. And you go, not quite the right context for this. So I think we'll get to a place where so many more people have done their own work that then the recreational side, I think, becomes so much safer because you don't mm-hmm. have these skeletons in the closet, as it were, that may come back to the fore at an inopportune time.
Yeah. And as the shaman that when I did ayahuasca said, this is the most unpredictable of medicines. And I'd say that for all of the psychedelics, it's you don't know what's going to come up. And that's the power in them, and that bringing that subconscious to the conscious. But like you said, that expert guidance is the key to really... making that into a healing experience versus potentially causing more trauma. So,
yeah.
What are some of your kind of mentors or idols in this higher thought or kind of spiritual arena, if you don't mind sharing?
there's two types of, I'm oversimplifying, of course, but there are people who like to be known and people who do not like to be known. And I think a lot of the people who are doing this work at the highest levels do not like to be known. They prefer not to be on websites. They prefer not to put a face to what they are doing. And so, that's certainly, we have quite a number of kind of more high net wealth clients, that we connect with, some of the higher end healers. And, so, in a broad sense, those are probably the spiritual mentors that I look to the most, the kind of higher end healers that do this work, quite privately. I think, in more of the kind of public arena, I think Gabor Mate is incredible. I love his work and I love his message. I don't know if you've ever seen his interview with Tim Ferriss.
I think I did. Yeah, it's incredible.
And I think Tim Ferriss is also another gentleman who's done an incredible amount for this movement, which is just so beautiful. And I think, I think Gabor Mate is actually, he's a perfect example. And his interview with Tim Ferriss is a perfect example of someone who really understands human nature and the human character, how quickly they can get to the core of your trauma. And because, Tim Ferriss is, he's an incredible human being, right? In terms of productivity and, career success and like what he's adding into the world. And like, there's so many different aspects and yet in, and I think he's had some, big breakthroughs since then from what I've read more recently. But you could see that in the space of 3 minutes of questioning, Gabor was brought him to a place where he was just like completely out of his comfort zone. Right.
Yeah.
And again, so working with experts that are able to kind of bring that in, trying to think more broadly, who are others that I think are doing great things. I think those are the two that I would anchor around. I think Stan Grof is also amazing. We spoke about him a little earlier. He's such a godfather of this space. I mean, he was doing research with LSD I want to say it's the 50s. It might have been the early 60s. I mean, he's also a good example of someone who has clearly had their share of psychedelic journeys. I mean, I've heard interviews with him he's now 83, 84. I can only hope that I have half the mental capacities that he has at that age. I mean, he's incredible. So it's clearly not the case that, we have no evidence that psychedelics has long lasting psychological damage if they're taken in the right way. And I think there are certainly people who are not taking them in the right way and so are probably doing damage to themselves. So yeah, I would say Stan, Tim and Gabor. I think, I think there's also a real requirement for, and there's a real conversation around these tools as further exacerbating inequalities, right? And so how can we make sure that these tools become more broadly accessible? For example, I've spoken about, the private healers that we work with and the amount that they charge. I mean, it's clear that, the overwhelming majority of our population cannot afford, 50K or 100K to work with a super high-end healer. Right. But what I do believe in is that as more people elevate their consciousness, again, the motivation shifts. So then it's like, okay, so how do I help other people? And the moment that begins to happen. So, again, there's a whole bunch of very critical voices that are out there saying, you shouldn't charge for this. You should, and it's like, look, it's just an energetic exchange. Let's, the reality is that you or me or anyone cannot help 8 billion people. So what we're doing is we're finding energetic exchanges where it's a win-win, and that is going to just build and build and build. And so we don't need to focus so much on the price point or the this and the that. It's just that different experiences are available to different people. Right. And that's going to, like all things, it's going to democratize, right? Like a car used to be completely out of range for absolutely everyone. Everything's changing in relation to that, right? So it's all about democratization. And I think it's going to happen quickly.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, I agree. A lot faster than all of us expect even.
100%.
So one thing I was wondering is, what are your thoughts on our experiences with microdosing? I know that's been a big topic of interest in a lot of high performing, Silicon Valley executives, people like that have been talking about it. And Tim Ferriss, different people like that are very adamant, you know, about it. Mm-hmm. So what's your experience or thoughts with that, or just with your clients and with everything?
Yeah, you know, it's one that I've been asked about, but I actually don't have a particularly strong perspective on. I think some of the science seems quite compelling. Mm-hmm. I myself, and I know some other people share my experience, the times when I've attempted it, it hasn't really worked for me. So I think it's like the macro dosing, it's the experiences are individualized. What I've found is that for me, either I've gone and taken a little bit too much, or I've taken too little. I have not been able to find a place where I'm like, oh, this is really helping me in terms of my quality of experience and quality of my work, or anything like that. So it hasn't worked for me. I prefer to be either on the macro dose or without any kind of outside influence personally. But the science seems very compelling, and there's a lot of people who this is working for. I think that's pretty much all I can say on the subject. It hasn't worked for me, so I haven't really delved deep into it, because that's just, it hasn't stuck for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, kind of the same for me as well. I've tried different doses and different variations, and adding in NAC with psilocybin, which I've read that will help your liver convert the psilocybin to psilocin, which is the active ingredient. Mm-hmm. So who knows? And then I've had many experiences where it was just too much, and I said, not going to be productive now.
You're like, hey, what does this calendar look like? You're like, oh man, bummer.
Exactly.
Yeah, you know, and I was just trying to, I hadn't actually thought of this before, but I would be very interested to understand whether there's any evidence for microdosing in any of the ancient traditions, right? Because mm-hmm. a lot of this stuff is about a return to ancient wisdom.
Yeah.
And I haven't personally heard about any evidence for sustained lower level use in any of the ancient traditions. So I'd be curious to know whether that would be the case. I actually don't know. I might go poking around a little bit to see if I can find anything after our chat.
Yeah, that's a good thought. I, now that you say that, I don't think I have either. It's been just talked about in more of the macro dose realm. So very interesting thought. We'll look into that. And if anybody listening has any thoughts or, knowledge of that, please feel free to reach out. Okay. So anything else, Jonathan, that you have on your mind that you want to talk about, you want to share, in terms of Behold or just anything with your story? Love to, wrap it up here shortly. Just wanted to give you, another moment to kind of talk about anything else you had left on your mind.
Yeah. I mean, I'd be curious, maybe if we could do, conscious, you said you wanted to wrap, but I'd be curious to see how you see this space emerging for your line of work, Adrian, mm-hmm. and then we can wrap from there.
Yeah, I mean, great question. I think that's, you know, unfolding right in front of our eyes. You know, it's a really exciting space because it's still so new, and we're the, you know, at the pioneer, kind of the frontiers of this all. So we kind of, it's up to us what we make of it, right? And so I think that, you know, what you said before about the whole goal of being of elevating consciousness, I very much vibe with that and agree. And that's my goal too, is just getting people to realize their true self-healing potential, and to get, you know, as a naturopathic doctor, we're trained to get to the root cause of what's really ailing people, instead of just managing symptoms, covering them up with, you know, medications, or even in the natural holistic world, people will just be loaded up on 30 supplements and here you go, take these the rest of your life. It's like, well, we call that green allopathy, you know, it's still thinking in that allopathic mindset of like, here's a pill for every ill, there's a supplement for every, you know, condition. So it's really a lot deeper than that. You know, and I see psychedelics as such a powerful tool in helping to get to the root cause, to get, which oftentimes happens to be mental, emotional, spiritual. You know, I see people all the time, they eat healthy, they're working out, doing all the right things, and they still are sick, you know, with these mysterious, you know, autoimmune diseases, and they don't know what to call them. So it's autoimmune, you know, why would your body be attacking itself? You know, that's what happens in autoimmunity. There's something there at a deeper level. And oftentimes that it's a limiting belief. It's that past trauma and things from your past that you don't even remember consciously that, you know, you certainly you can get to with talk therapy and different methods, but it can take years, you know, and these are such powerful tools to where this can happen. And as we've all, both seen transformative experiences from a few ceremonies or, you know, one ceremony and they're completely transformed. So, you know, and not only mentally, but on physical type of conditions as well. So I'm just really excited about being involved with this any way that I can. I'm actually waiting to hear back if I got accepted into the California Institute for Integral Studies psychedelic certificate that they have. So I interviewed for that and hopefully got in this year. I have a good friend who's in the program now, Dr. Crescencia Felty. And so I think there's just so much potential for what can be done with this in terms of blending naturopathic medicine. Like you said, it's bringing back all those traditional modes of healing back to the forefront, because that is the true, you know, medicine. That is the true healing ways. It's like they want to call this alternative medicine, and what's going on now is conventional. It's like, well, it's not really alternative. It was the way medicine's been done since the history of humans. And only in these last 100 years did the synthetic, you know, pharmaceutical type of model, due to the Rockefellers and a whole, you know, that whole history behind that, which it goes really deep. But, you know,
we'll do that in another episode.
Yeah, exactly. Part two. So I'm just excited about, you know, in terms of how exactly I'm involved, I'm not sure. But this right here is one of the many ways of just getting out the truth to as many people as that listen, you know, about how powerful these tools are, how amazing they are, how beautiful of experiences they can be, and just to get people living their, you know, true, vital, healthy, you know, realized full potential. So.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I love that. That's beautiful, man. And that's what this work is all about. You know, it's bringing more beautiful energy, individual by individual into the world. You know, have you seen some of the hard science on the autoimmune? There's an article that I came across recently that I think you'll enjoy.
In terms of psychedelics and autoimmunity?
Yes, indeed.
No,
hard science. I'll share that across with you after our chat.
Okay. Yeah. I could put that in the show notes as well for anybody interested. And, really been a pleasure. I've really enjoyed this talk, Jonathan. It's been really awesome connecting, and would love to connect in person someday here soon. I haven't been to Thailand yet, so maybe I'll come visit you here if I can.
Amazing. Amazing. Yeah. Thank you so much for having me, Adrian. It's been a real pleasure, and, great conversation. So yeah, keep doing the beautiful work that you're doing, and, thank you again.
Awesome. Will do. Thank you.